From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, we have a big day tomorrow. Sundays are always big days, of course, but it's the Super Bowl. Super Bowl Sunday is upon us, and I'm not sure which team needs a miracle this year. Maybe it's Philadelphia based on the betting odds in Las Vegas. But I hope that you and your family and friends enjoy the big game. I will be, for sure. Don't have a horse in that race, but it's always fun to watch, and the commercials are always interesting anyway. But until that point, we have a good show for you ahead for today. We've got two interesting guests for you. We'll be talking to Tony Schreiner. He's the CEO of an organization called Mass of the Ages, and he's got a new program or a new series of programs coming out called God Bread. It's an 8-part mini series, you might say, that's going to be making it into theaters in two parts. And the focus is on Eucharistic saints. I think when we focus on these saints throughout Christian history who have given up their lives out of devotion to the Eucharist, protecting the Eucharist, or because of they're promoting the Eucharist, I think that those saints are worth noting. And I'm so excited to see this new series, God Bread, that's coming out. It's underway. We'll be talking with Tony Schreiner later in the show about how that project is coming along. Later in the program, we'll be talking with Teresa Tamio. She's one of our favorite guests, and she's going to be talking about her brand new book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. And she's, of course, a very experienced pilgrimage leader, and you all know her from EWTN Radio and other media projects. She's got this fascinating new book coming out, and I encourage people to pick up the book, especially if it leads towards your own pilgrimage. And if you're looking to take a pilgrimage of your own, you can join me on a pilgrimage in this Jubilee year. Many people are traveling to Italy in this very special year in Rome. And on my pilgrimage, we'll be going to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome for the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati on July 28th through August 4th. And I'll be going to various places of saints and miracles, apparition sites, and visit the Duomo in Milan, visiting Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held, walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence, see many of those great artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Botticelli, Donatello, and many others. And we'll, of course, see the David, as well as the site of the apparition of Mary to the seven holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish in Rome to see the many beautiful sites around the Vatican and finish up with the canonization of one of the great modern saints. That's Pier Giorgio Frassati. Again, that's July 28th through August 4th, coming right up. And people can go and sign up at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to sign up and learn more about that upcoming Miracle Hunter pilgrimage. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day for today's date, the famous Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich from Germany. In the 365 Days with Mary project for today, February 9th, we've got the Virgin of Africa from Ceuta in Spain in the year 1651. The question of the week is a good one. The Vatican came out with new norms related to Marian apparitions like Medjugorje in 2024, but how do the new norms apply to Eucharistic miracles? And the might be the miracle of the day is the approval of the miracle attributed to Saint Pope Paul VI. So we'll be going over that later in the program. Let's take a look at miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And although it's not a miracle, it's a celebration of perhaps one of the most famous miracles in sort of modern history, we might say. That is Bernadette of Lourdes is premiering in Rome. And it's 1,600 of Rome's poor were in attendance for this new musical called Bernadette of Lourdes. And so at the end of the musical, members of the Missionaries of Charity Order, they founded by St. Teresa of Calcutta, of course, they offered each guest a bag of food. So this is a musical that tells the story of St. Bernadette, of course, the visionary of Lourdes, and it made its debut in January, and premiere was reserved for a select group of guests, 1,600 people from low-income families in Rome. In the office of the papal almoner, headed by Cardinal Konrad Krajewski, he invited more than 1,000 low-income people and refugees to enjoy the show in a large auditorium located in the Via della Conciliazione, the wide Avenue that leads to St. Peter's Square. And on Tuesday afternoon, the thousands of guests presented with their tickets distributed at the soup kitchens and in the communities where they live enjoyed this performance that had been a success in France starting earlier in the month and will be included in the official program of the Jubilee of Hope. And at the end of the musical, members of the Missionaries of Charity gave out food and gave each guest a bag of food. And Krajewski, he emphasized in a statement to Vatican News that it's, quote, very beautiful to think that the poor will see the premiere, since after all, even in the gospel, they are given priority, end quote. And so the musical will be available for a month to pilgrims coming to Rome during the Jubilee of Hope. And this show will then be performed in other Italian cities such as Naples, Bari, and Turin. And eventually, it's expected to come to the United States and Latin America next year in 2026. So it's a great new musical, and it shows the plight and perseverance of Bernadette Subaru, the famous 14-year-old visionary who received those mystical encounters with the Virgin Mary in that grotto in Massabielle in Lourdes. So that's an interesting one. I do hope it comes to the United States. It'll be fascinating to see it, and that's called Bernadette of Lourdes. Let's take a look at Catholic Pope Trivia. We do this every week. We ask a trivia question and give it a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And last week we asked the question, we talked about the upcoming episode of They Might Be Saints, the Martyrs of La Florida. And the question is, what other martyrs from the United States are now currently moving along the path to sainthood? And the answer, of course, was the Martyrs of Georgia. Pope Francis just authorized a decree coming out of Rome saying that they will be beatified. So the Martyrs of Georgia will be first ahead of those Martyrs of Florida to be beatified. So that's congratulations to everybody working on that cause and the recognition of more martyrs from the United States. Later in this show, we're going to be talking with Teresa Tomeo about Italy. We'll be talking about the wonderful places of saints and miracles. Now, Italy has by far the most saints. It has the ultimate home court advantage with the Vatican there in Vatican City inside of Italy. Question for today is, what country has the second most saints? And if you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Tony Schreiner from Mass of Ages about a brand new project called God Bread about Eucharistic saints. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk a lot about the miracles of the Eucharist on this program, Eucharistic miracles, and saints who have had a devotion to the Eucharist who have died protecting the Eucharist, martyrs of the Eucharist, you might say. There are so many saints throughout history who really shine the light on how important this sacrament is in our life, in this ultimate gift of God to us. We're so excited to be joined today by Tony Schreiner. He's the CEO of Mass of Ages, and there's a new project coming out called God Bread, and it's going to be some short films that will actually be making it into theaters coming next year around Corpus Christi. Very exciting to highlight these Eucharistic saints and draw people's attention to the Eucharist. Welcome to the program today, Tony Schreiner.
Hey, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, and I think this is an exciting project. And when we talk about those saints who gave up their lives to defend the Eucharist, perhaps, or who their Eucharistic devotion is worth emulating in some way, it makes us draws our attention to the Eucharist and how important it is. So I think this project is so interesting and exciting. This focus on Eucharistic saints. What got you going on this project that's called God Bread?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. It's so important for us as Catholics to be connected to the humanity of Jesus Christ, because he's our mediator between God the Father and us. He's the only mediator. So Mass of the Ages is a registered nonprofit. We've done films, we've done a lot of media, and we've got over 11 million views worldwide in just a few short years. So this is a project that is near and dear to all of us, but most specifically, our creative director and founder of Mass of the Ages, Cameron O'Hearn. He really wanted a project focusing on these Eucharistic saints. So he is, as a creative genius, in my opinion, I'm obviously biased, but he has brought this to the team, and we're working on this. And as you were saying, we're going to be filming in 2025, taking it to theaters all across the United States, and hopefully even beyond that, but we're going to take it to theaters all across the United States and get this in front of Catholics everywhere so that they can be connected with these people who were humans like us, born with original sin, went through trying times, had to struggle, had to grow in virtue, but they made decisions, right? They put in right effort into, in some cases, like you were saying, defending the Eucharist. And Little Li in communist China is actually one of the saints that we will be focusing on in these eight short films that we're going to be doing over the course of 2 years. And we're very excited about that. And other saints who just sought it out, right? So we're also going to be highlighting Saint Kateri Tekakwitha and her journey. She was baptized on a pagan reservation, and she wanted to receive her first Holy Communion, and she walked over 200 miles with very poor eyesight. I didn't know about this until Cameron's kind of giving me all this background, like, oh, yeah, that's so exciting, that's wonderful. And we want to tell that story in a narrative setting, right, with actors and actresses on a set so that people can be really transported into that time when that saint lived and be inspired to be connected with Jesus Christ in the Eucharist. So we're very excited, Michael.
Wonderful. And we're talking today with Tony Schreiner, CEO of Mass of the Ages, and talking about the new project, Godbread, four short films that will be packaged together, edited together to make a theater release film. And in the following year, the four more short films being packaged together in the same way. So this is very exciting, a two-part project or an eight-part project, depending on how you slice it and dice it. But you mentioned a few of the saints. Let's go through the saints that will be featured in that first 2026 release in the theaters. What are the four stories that you're focused on filming this year?
Yes, Michael. So we are, I don't know if we've definitely decided on St. Margaret Mary Alacoque and obviously her devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. That is definitely one that we will be doing in filming in 2025, and will be released in the first episode, if you will, of these four short films put together. I think part of the work as an artist that Cameron and our team are doing is trying to figure out, okay, we've essentially picked these eight saints, some of which we're not going to mention just for suspense reasons, right? And just how do we put the right four together in each of these two parts, and then where do they fit in that part, right? So, okay, if we're going to pick these four for the first part, then what order should they be in, right? Because that really affects the viewer. So there's still a lot of questions as far as how we're going to put that all together. But as I mentioned, St. Margaret Mary Alacoque is going to be in that first part. I do believe, although I'm not 100% certain, but I'm pretty certain that St. Kateri is going to be also in that first part. We also have a surprise. There's something that we're not going to release just for suspense purposes, and because Cameron doesn't want to do it, and he's the creative director, so I'm fine with that if that's the way he wants to do it. But we are going to try to make this something that any Catholic will want to go and see, because maybe they've heard about, I've heard about St. Kateri, I really don't know much about her, The Sacred Heart of Jesus devotion. Yeah, I've heard about that. I don't really have, that much information. Or some of us say, oh, yeah, I think I know a lot about this, but we've never seen this in a narrative setting, right? In a, wow, this is a short film, and how are they going to do this? And what's the actor or actresses, how are they going to portray them? And what's the set going to look like? And you can only do so much in a short film. So we're really excited about taking, because we don't have an unlimited time, right? We have a short film. We're probably looking at anywhere between 12 to 20 minutes. And each film will be different in length, and then packaging those together in those two parts, like you mentioned. So we are excited to tell those stories. Most near and dear to our hearts is St. Kateri, because of how close she is to the United States, right? She's was just north of us in Canada, and we've got a lot of information about her, but we're going to try to, we've done a lot of research and continuing to do research. That's what Cameron is doing. So I hope that helps the listeners understand there's a lot of things that we're still trying to work out, but it still is exciting. And we're going to keep, as time marches on, Michael, hopefully as we get closer to the release, we can come back on and give more details, right?
That sounds wonderful. It's an exciting project, and it sounds like the project will make it to theaters, but even before it does make it to theaters, people might be able to watch the individual episodes somewhere. What's the best place that people can go to? The project is still in process, of course. Where can people go to sort of get updated about the project and find out about what's happening next?
Yes. Yeah, great. So tradition.tv. So just the word tradition.tv is a website that is dedicated to all of our projects, and we will be updating that website frequently so that people know what's going on. So again, tradition.tv, and we'll continue to update it. We'll continue to give people glimpses into what we're doing. And there's a teaser trailer that's on that website. When you go to tradition.tv, you'll clearly see a portion that says God Bread, and watch the teaser. And we've got a very short but very powerful video for anybody to see. So I welcome all listeners to go to tradition.tv, watch that trailer, and get excited about this group of 8 short films. And we're going to cut this into 2 pieces and present 4 of those together in 2026, and then the other 4 in 2027. It takes a long time to do this, Michael. I wish we could, film this and edit it and get it out in 2025, but it just takes a lot of time to get it done right.
Well, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I do my own film production as well with EWTN, so I definitely know that the filming is just the beginning. The editing
right.
can take a very long time, and everybody wants to see it, and I want to see it as well, but it's just a long, arduous process, a process filled with love, to be sure, but it takes a while. So, well, we're so grateful to you, Tony Schreiner from The Mass of Ages, talking to us about your brand-new project that's coming out, God Bread. We'll be looking for 8 short films that will be recut and redistributed into 2 films that will be making it into the theaters, 2026 and 2027. We're so excited to see how this goes, and we'll be excited to have you back on the program to discuss. So thank you so much, Tony Schreiner, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, Michael. God bless you.
God bless. That was Tony Schreiner, CEO of Mass of Ages. What a fascinating new project about Eucharistic saints. I think these saints are inspiring for all of us, and to see the devotion to the Eucharist that these saints have had throughout the ages, and it inspires us in our faith in a big way to see these people who have given up their lives in one form or another to defend the Eucharist. It's absolutely amazing. We'll be excited to see that program, or that series of programs, when they come out. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. The Vatican came out with new norms related to Marian apparitions in Lake Medjugorje in 2024. How do the new norms apply to Eucharistic miracles? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting the questions in my email inbox. Those are always fun to get. But I even more like answering questions in person. And I travel around the country maybe 20 times a year to different shrines or parishes or conferences. And I give talks about miracles, maybe about Marian apparitions or Eucharistic miracles. And these days are related to the Eucharistic revival. But afterwards, I always open it up to the audience to ask questions. And I'm always interested to see what people are thinking about. And a great question coming in via email this week. Dear Miracle Hunter, the Vatican came out with new norms related to Marian apparitions like Medjugorje in 2024. How do the new norms apply to Eucharistic miracles? Thank you, John. Well, it is an interesting question because previously in the 1978 norms, and these are the norms for proceeding and judging alleged private revelations and apparitions, those always related to things like private revelation. So messages that were purportedly being given to a saint or other mystic or other person claiming these things, messages from God or from Mary or some other saint, you might say. And so those norms always focused only on private revelations and didn't really take into account things like weeping statues or Eucharistic miracles or other kinds of miraculous phenomena. And I learned over the years that those norms that were sort of outlined for Marian apparitions, they could be sort of retrofit or shoehorned into other types of miracles, and the process was somewhat similar, but Marian apparitions were the only ones who had an official Vatican process that was actually on their website and otherwise. But in the new norms that were released in 2024, which we talked a lot about on this show, you can go to the old audio archives on this show to hear our discussion about how they changed the rules, so to speak, and in preparation for the Medjugorje statement. Those new norms now do not only focus on these things that have messages. They actually also focus on any type of supernatural phenomena, including Eucharistic miracles. So again, one of the big takeaways from these norms in 2024 is that the Vatican has the final say related to a miracle. And so in the past, it had always been the local bishop, the hot potato was in their hands, so to speak, when it came to the investigation of a miracle. And the real hot potato would be making a judgment. I suppose the investigation still is in the hands of the local bishop, but making some sort of a statement about it now gets shuttled over to Rome in hopes that these things will be processed a little bit quicker than some of the years or decades that have happened in the past. So related to Eucharistic miracles, I imagine we'll see something of similar. And again, we've seen zero cases like this so far under the new norms, but the new norms do apply. And one of the big takeaways of the new norms is that it becomes very clear that the Vatican and the local bishop are working in concert. They're working together to come to an answer on these cases. And so in the past, there never was any acknowledgement of communication between the local bishop and Rome. And so now that is not the case. And Rome and the local bishop will work together to come up with an answer. And theoretically, if the evidence is there, the Vatican will allow the expression of faith, so to speak, that nihil obstat, nothing stands in the way when it comes to a case of a Eucharistic miracle that seems to pass all the scientific tests and muster. So that's how it will work in the future based on the 2024 norms, but we've never seen it before. So I'm quite sure when it actually happens, we'll dig into that quite a bit in the future. So thank you, John, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me a message to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week. We look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to each day of the calendar year from somewhere around the world. From today's date, we have February 9th, the Virgin of Africa from Ceuta in Spain in the year 1651. And the story goes that the Pietà statue of the Virgin of Africa, patron of the Spanish city of Ceuta in North Africa, is the subject of a legend that after Emperor Justinian gave it to Governor Procopius, it was hidden underground during the Muslim period, which ran from about 700 to 1400, and then was found illuminated on a hill. More likely, Henry the Navigator sent it to Ceuta after conquering the city for Portugal. On February 9, 1651, a plague ended when the statue was processed. In accordance with a vow, officials process annually on this date to the Iglesia de Africa for a Thanksgiving Mass and floral offering. And the main feast day of the Virgin of Africa is August 5th, and the statue was canonically crowned on November 10, 1946, and the Virgin of Africa was declared patron of Ceuta on November 24, 1949, and proclaimed mayor in 1954. And that is the 365 Days with Mary devotion of the day, the Virgin of Africa from Ceuta in Spain in 1651. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, or download the free app from the iOS App Store, 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week, where we pick a miracle that happened at some time in Christian history that lines up exactly to the day's date. So for today's day, we have the approval of a miracle attributed to Pope Paul VI in the year 2018. In February of 2018, the Congregation for the Cause of Saints approved a miracle attributed to Blessed Paul VI involving the healing of an unborn child. And this approval paved the way for his subsequent canonization. And although it didn't happen on February 6th, it's noteworthy that the Congregation for the Cause of Saints approved this miracle attributed to Pope Paul VI on this date. And the miracle involved the healing of an unborn child and actually resulted in Paul VI's canonization that very year. And so that is the miracle of the day. Let's take a look at sainthood news this past week with a Holy Father. Pope Francis received in audience His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the same dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the miracle attributed to the intercession of Blessed Vincenzo Maria Apolloni, the founder of the Institute of the Sisters of Mercy, born in Verona on January 26, 1802, and died there on November 11, 1855. According to the website for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints, she was the founder of the Institute of the Sisters of Mercy. The charisma of the Institute was marked by her experience in constantly working to assist the sick, the elderly, and orphans until her death. She will be Blessed Vincenza Apolloni, and that will lead her to be Saint Vincenza Maria Apolloni. And that is the sainthood news for today. And the Might Be Saint of the Day, we talk a lot about They Might Be Saints. That lines up to my television series, They Might Be Saints, and my book of the same name, which is available on EWTNRC.com. I think it's my best book. The Might Be Saint of the Day is a very famous blessed, and that is Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich. And you popularly might know her. She was the inspiration for some of the writing of the film, The Passion of the Christ. Some of the details were drawn from the visions of Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich. And she was born to poor but pious peasants. She was a pious child who suffered with poor health, received visions and prophecies, and they were so common that she thought all children could see the child Jesus and the souls in purgatory. And she was able to diagnose illnesses and recommend cures and to see a person's sins. And she worked on her family's farm as a seamstress and as a servant to the poor, where she studied the instrument as a she was a servant to a poor organist, and she entered the Augustinian convent in Dulmen in Germany in 1802. And though her health was poor, her enthusiasm for the religious life was great, and she was energized her other sisters, or put them off badly. I guess there was a different opinions about her, given going into religious ecstasies in church, her cell, or while working. The convent was closed by the government in 1812, and Anne moved with a poor widow, and her health failed. And instead of working as a servant, she became a patient, and her visions and prophecies actually increased. And later that year, she received the stigmata with wounds on her hands and her feet, her head from the crown of thorns, and crosses on her chest. She had this gift of inebetia, living off nothing but communion for the rest of her life. And she tried to hide her wounds, but word leaked out, and the vicar general instituted a lengthy and detailed investigation. and it was determined to be genuine. In 1818, she was relieved of the stigmata. The next year, the government opened their own investigation. She was imprisoned, threatened, cajoled, and kept under 24-hour-a-day surveillance. And the commission found no evidence either way, could not get Anne to change her story, and eventually they gave up and they failed to publish their findings. While they were forced to report, they declared the incident a fraud, but could not explain why they thought so or why they had not published their findings. And the poet Clemens Brentano visited Anne, and she announced that she had seen Brentano in a vision and that he was to make a written record of the revelation she received. And he made notes of the messages, translating from Anne's Westphalian dialect to common German, giving Anne to confirm his vision. In 1833, these were published as the Dolorous Passion of Our Lord Jesus Christ, according to the Meditations of Anne Catherine Emmerich. This was followed in 1852 by The Life of the Blessed Virgin Mary, which is a three-volume Life of Our Lord from 1858 to 1880. While many such revelatory works deal with spirituality and ideas, these are very much straightforward narratives and descriptions of these events, and they have yet been the source of encouragement for many. Now, her cause for canonization was formally introduced on November 14th, 1892, but the investigation was halted on November 30th, 1928. And however, these accusations that caused the halting were proven to be false, and the investigation resumed in May of 1973. And she died in February 9th, 1824, in Dulmen in Germany. And due to rumors that her body had been stolen, her grave was opened 6 weeks after her death, and her body was found incorrupt. And her relics were translated to the Holy Cross Church in Dulmen in Germany in 1975. And she went on to be declared blessed. And with one more miracle, she will be declared a saint. She will be Saint Anne Catherine Emmerich. But for now, she is a blessed, and she is the might-be saint of the day. And for those people who are interested in might be saints, you can connect to my television series, which airs every Wednesday on EWTN television this week on February 12th at 8 a.m. Central Time. They Might Be Saints episode is Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovich. And I go over the short, impactful life of Teresa Demjanovich. I present the case for canonization of this Sister of Charity, which includes the only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration. And that is They Might Be Saints, Blessed Maria Teresa Demjanovich, on February 12th at 8 a.m. Central Time. That's They Might Be Saints. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Teresa Tomeo about her new book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. This is a jubilee year for our Catholic Church. People are flocking to Rome from all over the world to celebrate the Jubilee in a big way. And I encourage people who are interested in going to Rome to check out my pilgrimage that I'll be leading for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And people can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to find out more about my trip. I'll be going July 28th through August 4th, and we'll be going to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome. It should be an amazing trip. And I encourage people who may or may not be coming with me, and I hope plenty of people do sign up, of course, to check out a brand new book that's out. It's called Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Places, Fascinating Places and Destinations Off the Beaten Path. That's Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places and Destinations Off the Beaten Path. And it comes to us from Teresa Tomeo. She's one of our favorite guests on this show, and she's the true Italy expert. I think that anybody who wants to know exactly what to look for in Italy should be listening to Teresa Tomeo. And of course, this book is a great place to find out, and also her radio show as well, right here on EWTN Radio. Well, we're so grateful to have you on the show today, Teresa. Welcome back.
Oh, Michael, it's great. And gosh, I'm excited for your pilgrimage, and I want to encourage listeners to sign up, because you're doing something very unique that a lot of people who lead pilgrimages don't do. You're going up to the places of the saints. Now, obviously, you'll be there for the canonization, but going up to Torino, and we can talk about this, but Turin, I think, is often ignored by pilgrims, and it's so beautiful. And, of course, you've got the tomb of Blessed Pier Giorgio Pisani right there, and you've got the shroud, even though it's not being exposed, you can still see where it's housed in Torino. And you've got the Don Bosco, St. John Bosco, and you're also
exactly.
going to Milano, which is another favorite place of mine. So good for you. I hope it fills up.
Yeah, no, I'm so excited about this trip. Places that, I've been leading pilgrimages for years, and some of these spots mm-hmm. are places that people have said, I'd really love to go back to Italy, but let's go to Milan, let's go to Turin, let's go to Florence. And so that's been the idea behind this trip. And your book, Italy Shrines and Wonders, is a beautiful book because it goes through the entire country of Italy and kind of highlights some of your favorite places. And you being an expert on Italy, it's really great to get your recommendations of people, people and places to see there. So thank you for putting together this Shrines and Wonders book.
You're welcome. It really is a labor of love, and I was teasing my husband. I said, we never had the blessing of having children, but I feel like I've given birth to a 20-pound baby because all you know about Italy, Michael, you know how much information there is, and I can remember writing it in our little house in Umbria last summer, and just, there's so much, and how much do I include? The book is almost 400 pages already, but it's like, where do I stop? Because there's so much. What about this? What about this? I could do this. I could do that. And you can only put so much in one book. So God willing, I'll be writing follow-up books to this to even do more.
Wonderful. And for this book, and I think it would be fun if today we went through the various regions of Italy, and you told us your favorite spot that you've been to in each of those regions. And again, the name of the book is Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places, and Destinations Off the Beaten Path with Italy expert Teresa Tamio. So we'll start off with Rome, and of course I'll be going to Rome as part of my pilgrimage, Rome and the Lazio region. What do we have, perhaps even beyond the Vatican? There's so much known about visiting the Vatican, but what's your favorite in that region?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, most people will probably, and since you're leading a tour, the people who go with you or go with me, or those of us who do tours know that we have to take the people, especially even if they've been there before. I highly recommend people go back to the Vatican and the other major basilicas and maybe go back to the Colosseum or back to the Forum, because you always learn something new. So you have your major basilicas, the Vatican Museums, ancient Rome, which would be the Colosseum, the Forum. Check out the catacombs. You want to go to the Pantheon, formerly a pagan temple. Now, of course, it's been a beautiful Catholic church for centuries. Piazza Navona, Trevi Fountain, all those great spots. But then I would really encourage people to check out some of the neighborhoods of Rome. So if you're in Rome, the city, I would definitely spend some time over in my favorite area of Rome, which is Trastevere, the Tiber. And you have beautiful churches there. Of course, you have Santa Maria in Trastevere, which has amazing mosaics. On the other side, a more quiet section, tucked kind of in the back of Trastevere, is one of my favorite churches, and that's Santa Cecilia. And there's just a beautiful church, and there's a crypt underneath, and there's information about her home and her life and her martyrdom.
Yeah, so first incorruptible in history, right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, spend some time in the neighborhoods. Testaccio is kind of a cool, funky neighborhood not too far from Trastevere. They have a great market. It's known as a flea market, but they have everything under the sun in that marketplace. It's very active, and they have all kinds of places where you can watch them make different types of foods. You could sit down at like a little high top area, and you could have mussels. You can have all kinds of fish. You can watch them make famous sandwiches. So to kind of go off the beaten path, it's not really the beaten path if you're in Rome, because the Romans do this, but just don't stick. It's beautiful, but go beyond, let's say, the Vatican and the major basilicas, and go into some of those neighborhoods and see some of those other churches. And then, of course, right along the Tiber, not far from Castel San Angelo, is another really cool church. And one of our mutual EWTN friends told me about this years ago. Our friend Susan Tassoni, who's known as the Purgatory Lady,
yes.
There's the Church of the Sacred Heart of Suffrage, which is very close, as I said, to Castel San Angelo along the Tiber. And there's a tiny museum in the church that's dedicated to the Holy Souls of Purgatory, which is super interesting and super cool. So those are just a few places inside the city of Rome. Now, for Lazio is phenomenal. So if you venture out to Lazio to the south, only 30 minutes south, about 15 miles, is a beautiful Castle Gandolfo. So we have the Papal Palace, which was a summer residence of the popes, and the last one to use it was Pope Benedict, and Pope Francis opened it up to the public. So you get to walk through this fascinating palace that has many of the rooms with vestments of the popes and desks and different furniture that was used by the popes who stayed there, and then you also have the opportunity to tour the beautiful Vatican Gardens. And the town itself is really cool. It has a lot of great restaurants, a lot of dining outside. They even have the first post office in Italy. It's really just a mailbox, and the oldest mailbox in the world in Casa Gandolfo. There's a great church that was redesigned by Bernini, St. Thomas of Villanova. And that, again, is only 30 minutes, 15 miles south of Rome. And it's a great wine region. They make great white wines, especially down in Frascati, that area. It's in the Castel Romani region, which is not really a region, but it's an area of Lazio that's known to have towns that produce great wine. If you go north of Rome, in about 90 minutes or less, you could be in Greccio. Now, Greccio is pretty close to Umbria, but Greccio is one of my favorites because it's a place where our much-beloved St. Francis established the first live nativity, and it's really cool. And there's a monastery associated with the Franciscan monks there as well. And then you can also head up to Viterbo, which is amazing for church history and a beautiful medieval village because it's the home of the first papal conclave. And then there's also this really cool event that happens, and I'm dying to get there. I'm working on getting there this September, Michael, to go see the Macchina, the running of the Macchina in honor of St. Rose of Viterbo. It is this huge, I mean massive statue. It's not even a statue. The statue is on top of this. Really, they call it a machine. And it's a statue of St. Rose, and they carry it through the streets. And it's so heavy that the men who are chosen each year, and they have they have to try out for this, chosen to carry this statue on top of a statue of St. Rose through the streets of Viterbo, they have to go meet with the bishop, and the bishop says a mass for them and prays over them and gives them the anointing of the sick because it's so risky in terms of possibly, God forbid, something happening to them, even death, because it's so strenuous. So Viterbo is beautiful. You can go to the place where they had the last papal conclave, the first papal conclave, and just, you know, walk through the streets. And St. Thomas also spent time there as well. So that's a really cool area. So that kind of sums up. And then, of course, you have the Tivoli Gardens outside of Rome, which is probably about an hour. If you go to really south, as you get closer to Campania, you've got Monte Cassino, which is where St. Benedict and St. Scholastica are buried, and it's a beautiful monastery that was completely rebuilt after it was bombed after World War II. So, you know, that's just one region. Think about this. I mean, that's just one region. That's Lazio. And I'm just barely scratching the surface. So those are a few favorite places of mine, in addition to hanging out in Rome, where you can go in the region of Lazio.
That's right. Teresa Tomeo, author of Shrines and Wonders, has been telling us about her favorite spots in each of the major regions of Rome, and we finished Rome and Lazio. Let's hop over to the green heart of Italy, and that's Umbria.
My favorite. You know, it's so funny, my favorite region now, because my husband and I live there part-time. I was telling you before we started the interview that it's been a dream of ours to possibly, if it was possible, to live part-time in Italy, and God willing, I hope full-time someday. But my husband retired a few years ago from his job as a professional engineer and director of engineering for a large firm. He still serves, obviously, as an active deacon, but it's great because he's gotten permission to serve in the churches in our area. But Umbria, I think, is the unsung hero of Italy. And I would like only for our people, Michael, to go, just our people. I don't want to get too well-known because it's just so beautiful and so peaceful. So, geez, my favorite spot in Umbria, I have to say, is Gubbio. Gubbio is north, and it's northeast of Umbria, and Umbria is a central region. It's landlocked. It's gorgeous. But I think Umbria rivals Tuscany. That's my personal opinion. But you've got Gubbio, which is where the famous tradition of the Wolf of Gubbio, and there's actually a church dedicated to this Catholic tradition there. It is a beautiful walled city. It has cobblestone streets, great ceramic shops, wonderful restaurants. And it's very dramatic when you pull up to Gubbio because you have Piazza Ducale and the palace. It's in the middle of the piazza and these towering buildings. And then you have the coolest thing. You have this cable car ride that's very unique that you can take up to the top of the mountain where the tomb of St. Ubaldo, who's the patron of Gubbio, is there. And you actually ride like in kind of a birdcage. It is so interesting. When you see this contraption, you're like, oh, my goodness. But it's very safe. And you go up the side of this mountain, the same mountain where every Christmas they have the largest outdoor Christmas tree that they light up, but you see these sweeping views over the mountains and the valleys of Umbria. So also in Umbria, you have, I mentioned Gubbio, you have Assisi, which of course is dedicated to St. Francis. You have, if you go, start going east, you have the beautiful little town of Spello, which is just east of Assisi, where they have the famous flower festival and the Feast of Corpus Christi, which is amazing, where they literally cover the streets in all these religious images made out of flowers and different types of natural ingredients. It's just stunning, and hundreds of thousands of people pack this little town every year. If you keep going east, you hit Spoleto, which is another cool town associated with ancient Rome. It has aqueducts. It has an amphitheater dating back, you know, centuries, one of the best archaeological museums in all of Italy. And then you keep going and you hit, gosh, you've got Montefalco, which is associated with St. Clair of Montefalco or St. Clair of the Cross. And then you have Norcia, obviously the birthplace of St. Benedict and St. Scholastica. They're buried in Monte Cassino, but they were born there. And Norcia is slowly recovering from the earthquake a few years ago. So that's a wonderful place to go. And you can still visit the monks. They have a new monastery that they built, the American monks there who make the beer, which is just outside the city walls. So those are just a few highlights. You have Perugia, which is a great city as well, a larger city, the capital of Umbria. And that also has the Church of San Lorenzo, which has the chapel of what is said to be the Ring of Mary, her engagement ring from Joseph. So that's just a highlight. But what I love about Umbria is it's, and I don't know if you agree with me, you probably do, but to me it's a slice of real Italy, because there's so many places that are off the beaten path, little agriturismos, or a town like Todi, which is another great place to visit. That's very close to where my husband lives. Not too many people go, but they're beautiful, well-preserved medieval villages. So Umbria actually has the most medieval villages in all of Italy.
Amazing. We've been talking today with Teresa Tamayo, author of Italy's Shrines and Wonders, and she's giving us her top picks from each of the major regions of Rome or Italy. So if we hop over Italy coast to coast, we're talking Campania and Puglia. What is your favorite pick from that region?
Wow, we need to do like 10 shows because there's so much.
You get one pick per region.
Yeah. Campania is beautiful. Of course, Campania, most people associate it with the Amalfi Coast. Okay, so let's put that out there right now because that's what people think of. Now, the problem with the Amalfi Coast, even though it's very beautiful, and I'm honest with my listeners, and also I have a travel company where I help people with Italy itineraries called TravelItalyExpert.com, and I would say anybody going south of Rome, the first thing they want to do is go to the Amalfi Coast. So it's beautiful, but you have to put out a warning because it's now overrun by tourists. Unfortunately, influencers have destroyed the beauty and the peace of Amalfi. I still suggest people go to see it because the way it's built, the colorful houses, jutting up against the mountain and then being right there on the Mediterranean, it is very pretty. You can't miss that. But unfortunately, it has become just, when I say insane, it's insane. For example, last year we took friends, and I told them we're not staying in the Amalfi Coast, but my friend insisted she wanted to go to the Amalfi Coast, and she wanted to see Capri. Now, Capri, 20, 25 years ago, was a great place to go. Unfortunately, even though it's still very beautiful, you're going to run into the same thing. But so if you want to go, go, but go for the day. Don't stay on the Amalfi Coast. And if you must stay in that area, I would recommend a little unknown town that's right next door to Amalfi. It's called Atrani. It's the smallest village in Italy, and it's very charming, and you can avoid 99% of the tourists if you stay in Atrani. Another favorite of mine is way up, and you'll be away from the tourists. I mean, there'll be some tourists there, but most of them will leave, is a beautiful town of Ravello, and that's way, way, way up in the mountains. There's Villa Ruffalo there, a lot of concerts that are performed in this great theater overlooking the Mediterranean. You've got Amalfi, you've got Positano, you've got those major cities there. And my favorite happens to be another place called Priano, which is right along the highway, so people kind of drive right through it. Sorrento, which sometimes is ignored. I really like Sorrento. It's a bigger city, and it still maintains its charm, and there's great places in Sorrento to stay. And you can access the Amalfi Coast by boat very easily from Sorrento. So you can hop on a ferry, go over to Capri for the day, come back, maybe the next day go down to Positano or Amalfi, and then come back and enjoy and relax, on the water and stay away from the craziness. And also in Campania, you have a number of beautiful places to see incredible ruins, such as Pompeii or Herculaneum, which is closer to Naples. Naples is a big, bustling city, but phenomenal for churches and museums. And then further to the south of Salerno, you have Paestum, which is amazing. And you also have this whole railway, this whole area where they make the buffalo mozzarella. So that's kind of just a highlight of Campania. And if I were to say my favorite place there along the Amalfi Coast in that area, it's a new town we discovered last year, and we stayed there with our pilgrims. It's called Vico Equense, and it's only like about 5 minutes north of Sorrento, and it has ferry access, and you get all the feel of the Amalfi Coast with the giant cliffs and the beauty, but none of the crowds in Campania.
Amazing. Well, we're so grateful to you, Teresa Tamio, for taking us through each of the first few regions. And if you're willing, I'd love to have you back another time to go through Sicily and Tuscany and Lombardy and all the rest of the places we didn't even touch on yet.
I know, right? I'd love to. I would love to. And I'd love to especially talk about where you're going with your group and Milan and Torino and also the area of Piedmont, which is phenomenal that a lot of people, and Lombardy, where the lakes are, the northern region. So yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back. But for the time being, the name of the book is Italy Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places and Destinations Off the Beaten Path. And people can go to teresatamio.com to find out more about this book. And it's also available at the EWTN Religious Catalog, so people can find it there. But we're so grateful to you, Teresa Tamio, for taking us through Italy. And we're looking forward to having you back to circling through the rest of the fascinating places of perhaps the world's most beautiful country. So thank you so much, Teresa, for joining us on today's program.
Thanks, Michael. God bless.
God bless. That was Teresa Tamio talking to us about her brand new book, Italy Shrines and Wonders. Again, you can get that one at EWTNRC.com or go to her website, teresatamio.com, for more information. And that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Tony Schreiner from the Mass of Ages, talking to us about his new project called God Bread, and Teresa Tamio talking to us about her book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. I encourage people to check out my pilgrimage coming up for this Jubilee year. We'll be going to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome for the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, and that'll be July 28th through August 4th of this year. We'll be seeing many places of saints and miracles, going to apparition sites and visiting the Duomo in Milan, visiting Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is kept. We'll walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio, see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence to see all those famous artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael. We'll see that David and the site of the apparition of Mary to the seven holy founders of the Servites. And of course, we'll finish up in Rome to see the incredible places there around the Vatican, and finish with the canonization of one of the greatest modern saints, that is Pier Giorgio Frassati. So check that one out, pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. Join me from July 28th through August 4th. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.